document number 7. The distinguished Dr. Rago is going to guide us through.
John,
oh, and Nancy, you're distinguished as well, Nancy. Go ahead, Nancy.
Right. That's what I needed, that reinforcement. Thanks, John. What I wanted to mention is that at the last meeting, obviously, we handed out the document, which included the tables that describe the observer coverage that we have now. And when we provided that table, we made the comment, I think it might have actually been me at this meeting as opposed to Jim Weinberg. We made the comment that the intention was to provide that information to give you the opportunity to review it and then come back to us with questions relative to how we determine the coverage that we have. And if you recall, I also made the statement that much of the current coverage is dictated or pre-allocated by legislation or litigation or other kinds of mandates. So that's the caveat associated with those data. And what we were really hoping we could get out of Paul's presentation, and Amy Van Atten is here as well and probably will field some questions. She runs our observer program, so she's here as well to help Paul as needed. But what we're hoping to get out of this, obviously, is your input in terms of what you think your priorities are. And as far as this year is concerned, obviously, it's over. It's the past, essentially. And so what we're looking towards is the future. So with that, I'll turn it over to Paul. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Thank you, John. I appreciate the kind words here. It's nice to be back. It's good to see some old friends, hopefully not too many old enemies and so forth. But it is very nice to be back and speaking about something other than dogfish. What I'd like to talk about today, as Nancy said, is a very deadly dull topic but it really is at the heart of a lot of the subjects that are being addressed, that have been addressed today, and those that will be addressed as we proceed with concepts like the annual catch limits, the results from the groundfish assessment review meeting, measures of gear evaluation, the skate and the herring management plans, and so forth. So it really is the piece that defines the interrelationships among fisheries, and so I think it does have some merit in that sense. Also, the standardized bycatch reporting methodology. This whole amendment has been plagued by an excessive, really long, complicated words strung together. That process continues now. We used to set priorities. Then we prioritize, and now we've converted that into an adjective of prioritization process here. And the process that we hope to do, as Nancy said, is to try to elicit comments on the current allocation of observer days, and primarily also to highlight some of the major constraints that circumscribe how the days are ultimately allocated to various fisheries and so forth. So I'd give you the high sign. Is that how I do that? Okay, we'll do that. Okay. By the way, that was the. This is the wrong presentation. This will be very short. This only has 3 slides in it. It's probably is the data stick. Maybe I'll make some more enemies at this point. Sorry. By the way, if you're looking at that first page, that is the new official, in the multicolored thing, that's the official National Marine Fisheries Service branding logo. But you can't see anything on it. So I'm going to go with the white background here so you can see it more clearly here. So as I said, try to give you a little bit of overview on the SBRM amendment and talk about the required review and reporting process. Also, give you a little more detailed background on the CDA allocation and the optimization process and distinguish between them, and particularly highlight the factors related to constraints on funding, constraints on allocation of days to areas, constraints on management priorities, and then give a little bit of discussion on the optimization process. Obviously not in not a lot of technical detail. And then finally, try to provide some answers on the various table questions that might. And I want to thank the New England Council for providing a set of questions. Hopefully, we'll be able to answer them in the course of this, or answer more specific questions as we go along. The next slide. The reporting process consists of basically three separate steps. One is an annual report that has five specific report summaries. Those report summaries are fairly lengthy and request a fairly high level of detail. Those questions will be addressed by the NRCC at its next meeting in terms of defining it. We've kind of scoped it out now, and I think it's about 80 pages per species. So if we want to reduce that somewhat and save paper and trees, we'll be reducing that. The evaluation report is a more comprehensive report, and it is going to be done every 3 years. And that will be sort of an internal review, probably consist of some sort of scientific peer review process, where we're looking at how well are we doing with respect to allocating days at sea, as well as other ways and to improve the process. And finally, we talk about the consultation and setting priorities process here. And essentially, what we're trying to do is to give all of you the opportunity to provide input on the allocations and to show where we are constrained and how that those constraints might be relaxed as part of the process. So the next slide. The table that you received on April 8th was the first attempt at that, and it addressed three or four specific areas within the actual requirements of the SBRM. The first was, what is the at-sea observer coverage in order to obtain the SBRM performance standards. Now, in the lawsuit, some of the commenters didn't like too much, but one of the things they did like was the use of the filtering approaches, which is sort of at the core of the prioritization and setting process there. And that is simply a way of identifying unlikely cells where a concentration of observer coverage to monitor and get precise estimates of rare events is unlikely events is sort of excluded from the exercise. In particular, things like scallops on longline fisheries and so forth, they do occur, believe it or not, but it would not be worth a lot of manpower or person power to get the accurate estimates of that function. The second one is the coverage level that would occur, and this one will always be true, that how would you allocate the observer coverage if, in fact, you had a shortfall? And that should probably be worded as when you have a shortfall. but it basically is how do you allocate, if you were to do that proportionally across all fisheries. And then the third item is the coverage levels that incorporate the recommended priorities, and then finally to give a little bit of insight or background on the recommended priorities. So what I'll do in the next set of slides is to kind of lead you through that table. I did bring a copy of it to the here, and I think most of the people at the table have had a copy of it in hand. But the first thing, again, recognize you can't read it other than to see what column I'm referring to. This is if we were to use the SBRM performance standards. Now, one of the reasons that there's a large mismatch in this is, for one, it's the first attempt at doing this. The second is that it's reflecting those allocations predicated on the 2004 observer data. So what we are doing here is a bit of apples and oranges to some extent. We're comparing what you would have been allocated based on an analysis of the 2004 data, which was in fact what is in the observer, the omnibus amendment, which just for the to update you, it was finally set into law on February 28th of this year. So, and oh, by the way, if there are questions, you know, please feel free to interrupt. And if I see people glazing over or looking like I have three eyes or something, I'll try to step back for a second. The next table, or the next slide, basically kind of has a very, this is the elephant in the middle of the living room here, is that, you know, under the SBRM, applying the filtering process to the 1984 data, it would require about 9,800 sea days, costing it roughly on the order of $11.5 million. We have funding for 6,217 days, so there's a shortfall of about 3,600 days as part of this process. Also at the bottom there, in the fine print, you'll see that there's 3,000 days allocated for U.S. Coverage in the special access programs, U.S. Canada monitoring, B-Day coverage, and so forth. Now, these are explicit management priorities consistent with the mandate of the language and the funding priorities. So, and that's an aspect here. Now, on the next slide, okay, here we go. There's a proportional allocation that basically says, you know, we had 6217, we needed 9874. You take that ratio, multiply it by the days that you have, and apply it out, and you get column 2. And then column 3 is what we actually allocated, or what we plan to allocate over the course of 2008. That incorporates not only what occurred through January, well, it basically is related to this calendar year, 2008, but what we plan on is a C-Day or observer year, and I'll kind of highlight that or describe that process a bit. Again, the purpose of all this detail is to provide a venue or access to what we do in terms of observer coverage. And when we say we, I should really clarify. It's the royal we. It's not me. It's the people in the observer branch within the center. And we're fortunate to have Amy Van Atten and Sarah Wetmore and some others here to sort of provide background on this and more details. I enter this primarily as the role of an analyst in my deep dark cave, so forth. So the final thing that there is in item 4 is there's a rationale for the recommended prioritization, and these can broadly be broken into what we call an optimization approach, which is trying to allocate the observer coverage optimally with respect to a set of criteria or constraints. Those constraints are primarily financial and programmatic. The financial one is the total number of days. The programmatic one is a strong focus on the New England groundfish fisheries. Now, I suspect this week this presentation will not generate a lot of controversy. Next week, when we go to the Mid-Atlantic, there will probably be a little more interest in that prioritization or that priority on the New England groundfish. The excuse me for a second. Next slide. Okay. This is the list of the funding source constraints. There are five major pools of money that are used, some of which are temporary, others which are permanent, but all of them have mandated coverages and so forth. So the first one, which is only 1% of the coverage, is sort of a general, titles for these funding sources are those which are used internally. So it's more or less the description of the funding line that we get. But it's one is to generate national generate bycatch reporting rather than C-date reports. So as part of the fund, the Observer program has been participating in a national bycatch report, which will try to demonstrate or summarize data across the country on Observer coverage. The Marine Mammal Protection Act Observers, this funding source is permanent, but it does not enter into the standardized bycatch reporting methodology omnibus amendment, the SBRM. It is used for marine mammal and protected species coverages other than turtles, and it provides limited coverage or utility in terms of monitoring fish bycatch. Now, the primary source of funding is New England groundfish, under our understanding of that, it's to be used only for New England groundfish fisheries or fisheries that take New England groundfish as bycatch. So that kind of broadens the scope, since that can take New England groundfish extend into southern New England. So there's some possibility of allocating to the Mid-Atlantic. The National Observer Program is a temporary source of funding, and basically is for infrastructure support and so forth. And then finally, the Atlantic Coast Observers is a very important, albeit small, component of the permanent funding, but that is what is used primarily for the Mid-Atlantic fisheries, and it's split evenly between coverages for fish and turtles. And of course, the reason that turtle explicit coverage is not particularly useful for finfish monitoring is that, of course, the focus is monitoring dropouts rather than processing of fish per se. So the management constraints. Right now, we presently are using 3,000 days to monitor catch in the U.S.-Canada quota fisheries, the special access programs, and B-Day coverage compliance. Note that B-Day coverage compliance is distinct from monitoring for precision targets. This is measuring the volitional transition or volitional declaration of B-days to A-days rather than that. But there's a rough target of about 30% coverage on those, so it's a very high coverage rate. All of the programs, again, just to reiterate what has been specified in the amendment, are predicated on having unbiased representative samples. So to the extent that that process gets distorted by various types of either non-compliance or the perception that these observers are doing something other than pure monitoring of the resource is is a problem. The 3,000 days does not have a particular or a statistical precision target. Instead, it's designed to get sufficient coverage to reduce the risk of TAC overages. Now, that again is a very important and valid criteria, but I think as council members and as part of the agency, it's important to realize that that comes at the expense of other aspects of bycatch reporting methodology. So finally, what remains after going through, after taking the 3,000 days for these various functions, is then used for allocating or estimating total discard, and doing that in a way that is trying to reduce the error, the statistical error, has increased the precision of those estimates. And we use an optimization approach, which is intended to doing a scheduling problem to say how do we achieve several simultaneous goals with subject to a set of constraints, and also subject to updated information. The SBRM is designed to regularly update the information given what we have in terms of year-to-year coverage, to provide that in a way that it reflects the best available, to use the overworked term, the best available information. But it really is a way of trying to capture that updated information as we monitor over the course of years and so forth. There are other parts, and that optimization approach is used for the New England groundfish coverage, for monkfish, and for fluke, scup, and sea bass, and I'll go into a little bit of detail on that as well. In terms of herring coverage is, again, it's not based on optimal coverage. It is based on a percent coverage of the fishing activity in the fleet, and the rough estimates suggest that something on the order of about 300 days per year is sufficient. What it does give us the opportunity to do is to refine that estimate. It gives us the basis from which we can subsequently get a better handle on what level of coverage is adequate for that fishery. And you can see that in that table that was distributed in April. You can see the magnitude of the observer coverage for the various fisheries that take herring and mackerel and so forth. To a large extent, monitoring of observer coverage is oriented towards the coverage of fleets which are defined by physical attributes. We don't monitor fluke trips or yellowtail trips or cod trips, although the intention may be to go for that purpose. What is observable is that the boat is a large mesh trawler leaving out of Portland, and we can get a sampling list which allows us to sample at a reduced rate and not have to cover the entire fleet in order to achieve that objective. So it's a subtle but very important point in terms of how coverage is allocated. Now, to a lesser extent, to some extent, that principle is violated with respect to herring coverage, because they are targeting on herring boats. So, when herring coverage is used in the purse seines and midwater trawls and so forth, it is targeting those vessels which are intending to go out for herring, and that you have a little bit. So that could be one area where the council can provide additional inputs on this kind of thing. And then finally, there's a open area, a general category scallop coverage, and open area scallop coverage in general, which is not industry funded. That is also not on this list. Industry funded coverage is based on percentage of activity as opposed, and the attempt, it's based on a call-in program and an attempt to achieve a percent coverage. Now, percent coverage monitoring programs do have advantages in that they ensure that you have a like a 1 in 10 or 1 in 3 or 1 in 5 coverage rate, and that it's systematically allocated across the fleet. In practice, it can be very difficult if you don't have enough people available, and Amy and Sarah and others can comment directly on the implications of those kinds of proposals and so forth. But I believe the industry-funded coverage for the scallop activity in the closed area or special access areas is on the order of 10%. So this is an important factor for the council to consider, that when you is it more important to cover the activity of a fleet when it's inside a closed area versus outside the closed area, or as part of some activity. You know, if it's, you know, there are certain binding constraints that are related to, say, a particular species, which is important to cover, say, yellowtail flounder and Nantucket lightship might be important, that kind of thing. So next slide there. Okay, we've been using an optimization approach since 2003, and there's a paper listed that just kind of gives the background on how it's applied there. The marine mammal and group, the protected resources branch within the center, also uses a proportional allocation scheme, which is based on similar principles. And the next slide has just what is included in this. We focus on three fishery management plans: groundfish, multi-species large mesh, monkfish, and then the fluke, scup, and sea bass in the Mid-Atlantic. And one of the things that you all know better than I do, of course, is that each trip not only catches the groundfish, but it also catches the other species. And so we attempt to take into account the overlap that occurs on a particular vessel trip, that so when we allocate, say, to a vessel going out of Portland, it has a certain probability of monitoring white hake and cod, but it also has a pretty good chance that it's going to pick up some monkfish if it's fishing on the bottom. So there are various components of the allocation which have overlap in them, and that's what the optimization is trying to achieve there. And then it, you know, it does what you think it should do. It tries to minimize the variance based on historical information. Next slide just gives a little bit about fisheries that, as I mentioned before, that do not enter into the optimization process. There, it's basically attempting to achieve some nominal level of precision or gain the background information necessary to have a more formal application of the optimization or the SBRM mandate. The next slide is probably too complicated to go through this part, but it does just highlights that there are several layers in this onion here. The species groups, the gear types, the regions, and then trip lengths, which either day trips or trip vessels, which is another part. Now, the next slide has. Let's see. I put my glasses on. Maybe I'll see it. All right. There we go. Yep. That's it. This gives you some background on the allocation process to kind of give you kind of a share of how where your tax dollars go here. The quota monitoring constitutes about 48% of the total budget there. We use a proportional allocation. Those are the days that are allocated, say, for herring as an example, which constitutes about 6%. Ad hoc or sort of discovery days, these are ones that are based on a percent exploration days or discovery days and variety of adjectives to describe ones that are maybe related to social science issues and so forth. And then finally, about 44% are used for statistical or so-called optimization type approaches. And again, this pattern reflects our current interpretation, that is, one that was implemented in 2008. It does not necessarily mean that it's the one that will be used as part of the 2009 process, and the one which I hope that the council will provide us with some feedback on, as well as the interpretation of that mandate there. And then also, as noted there, there are about 700 days that are used for gillnet coverage for marine mammals only. That is, they're not providing any coverage for fish in those trips. Now, the next slide is a little bit complicated, but essentially it tries to give you some idea of what the timeline is for this in terms of when Congress approves the budget or when Congress approves the continuing resolution in October. So you have fiscal years defined from October through September, and then you have a sort of the bagman comes in January, February, delivers the money. We know how much is actually going to be available for that. We run the algorithms or update the information, and then create the C-Day schedule, which begins on April 1st. So the ideal kind of C-Day schedule is April 1st to March 31st. And just below that, there's a little bit of information about various fishing years. Of course, probably the primary one of which is the groundfish days, groundfish sea days, which begin May 1st, of course. So in the next slide, again, the bold-faced red italics underlined is 2008 is a transition year. It reflects partial implementation of this process defined under the SBRM, and the reason again is that it's partial is because it's constrained by the management and funding objectives, so forth. But it's in terms of making that complete translation is what we hope to complete, fully implement in the in the coming year. The next slide is the one, again, to Department of Redundancy Department. This is the 2008 is the transition year. We want to expand, and we're in the process of improving the application of the optimization and to try to account for all the objectives, not only fish and protected species, but the quota monitoring and the B-Day compliance and so forth. In terms of offering a proposal in terms of the steps that that can be part of the subsequent discussions with the NRCC, but there are some timing of these reports that probably should be discussed when and what magnitude type of report is desirable by the council and what format for delivery and so forth. So this is all kind of open-ended at this point. So I probably have blabbed on enough, and there are some additional slides which you can look at there, and we can go to them. I think they're in your handouts beyond this, but can anybody read that? No, but that's just to focus your attention on those topics. And if you want to ask some questions, there are a set of specific questions, and perhaps if Tom or Chris or anybody wants to provide input, I'm happy to try to answer questions at this point. So thank you.
Okay, thanks, Paul. We do have staff comments. So, tab 1, document number 7, as I said before. If Chris or whomever wants to present those or wants to highlight a couple of them, that's fine. Otherwise, I can go right to the council and see if the council has some comments or questions. Chris, you want to guide the council through document 7?
Well, I think you can see if there are questions from the council, but I'd also point out that under tab 8, probably should have been under tab 1, that the center provided specific answers to some of those questions that we had asked.
Okay, anyone on the council? David.
Yeah, Paul, I'm going to go to the chat with the little tiny print that you can't see on the board.
Okay, good.
So you can get it out.
Yeah, yeah. Got my glasses off.
I probably have to put them back on.
No, I have to take them off to see. That's all right.
I guess I need you to kind of walk me through one of these so I understand it
okay.
better. And I get down to numbers 21 and 22, the New England small mesh trawl and the Mid-Atlantic small mesh trawl.
Okay.
My question is, the New England ones generated a huge number of possible trips, at least in the first column.
Mm-hmm.
In a fishery that's very small, and I don't even know if it has 2,000 days at sea. And yet the Mid-Atlantic one is, operates year-round, 4 or 5 different species that are fished with small mesh, and it has a much smaller number. Could you explain to me why we get what seem to be,
right,
I would think to be inconsistent numbers on the size of the fishery?
Right. That's an excellent question. And one of the major elements in terms of allocations that go to when you see very large numbers that may be off the charts, they are generally related to the presence of turtles, let me just see if I can I take that back. This one, what I said is generally true, but for the otter trawl, the small mesh otter trawl, and we'll have Andy come up. It's skates is the is the one where the species group which has a very high rate of discarding, and not only the in terms of magnitude, but more importantly for this process, its level of precision. That is, it's highly variable. So in this process, when you try to allocate observer coverage to a particular fleet, the species group which has the highest coefficient of variation will be like a magnet. It will draw or require a lot of coverage in order to reduce that precision or that CV down to 30%. So in this case, it's a skate. If you look at the next highest one, it's our old friend dogfish at 492 days, and a fluke scup and sea bass, probably mostly scup, I guess. But that's at 455 days. So we using the amount of days that were available for allocation, roughly about 2,500 days or so, we came up with 175 days on that. Now, if you were to totally relax all of the constraints on the use of those 3,000 days, the allocation process would say just proportionally allocate the ratio of the 6217 to 9874, and you would get 1,274 days in there, which would not meet the 30% target, but would in fact, probably triple the coverage necessary for monitoring of dogfish. It would quadruple the coverage you needed for fluke scup and sea bass. It would be roughly about 6 times more than you would need for
the discard of multi-species small mesh, so silver hake, red hake, and so forth. Am I making it any clearer, or is it worse?
We were doing all right till you got to skates.
Okay.
I'm going, well, what I think of as a New England small mesh fisheries are four raised foot rope trawl fisheries that probably catch about six skates a year combined. Now, if you know, I guess part of it may be in where we define New England. If New England is all, you know,
it's fairly broad, yeah.
Does it go down all the way to New Jersey or something?
Not that far. But
I'm not trying to be funny. I just there's no the only place we were allowed to use a trawl with a sweep on it would be south of Cape Cod. So anywhere in the Gulf of Maine, they're only raised foot rope trawl fisheries. So there's no skate catch, period.
Right. Now, this may be a mismatch between the data that went into the generation of the SBRM and the information that's presently available for the 2008 observer coverage. The SBRM was based on 2004 calendar year data, a complete year. So if the regulations have changed, or you know the nature of that fishery has been altered, then of course that basis for saying we need 2,000 days is not correct. But if I may, just one point that you've raised, which is particularly important in terms of coverage, is that specific gears are generally very difficult to track within the vessel trip reports because the naming conventions and coding and so forth can be problematic. You know, that certainly has been, you know, with until codes are developed to say, okay, what is a turtle chain versus a rock chain and so forth, or to say a raised foot rope versus a separator trawl versus some other piece of gear. Those kinds of things are seemingly small, but you know, critically important to that. And I think Amy or Sarah can certainly address that in much better detail than I can. But that is an important aspect of it. The fact that you know it's not on the dealer records means that there's at least a 5 to 6 month lag between the availability of that information in audited form versus, you know, more timely stuff that would be available on a dealer record transaction. So there's all kinds of things that are related to linkages of databases and transactions too. So thanks. Sorry to go so long on that.
No, actually, you've actually helped quite a bit, because I think that's one of the things we do have to do is, for example, that all the trawl fisheries other than shrimp are OTF. Lot of trawl fish.
Yeah.
And then it says caught in size, 2-inch, 2.5, whatever. So you can't tell what kind of sweep is
right.
being used. That's one. And the right. other is where New England ends and the Mid-Atlantic starts. For your statistical purposes, would probably, if we had that, it would probably allow us to comment better on this. Because I think what I see here now is that probably southern New England fisheries are getting included in the New England small mesh fisheries, when I would think of them more as Mid-Atlantic fisheries. You know, squid, mackerel, butterfish, those fisheries.
Yeah.
So there's two right off the top that
okay.
help to explain it. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Tom Neese.
These are going to be hard questions now.
This is not a question. This is a follow-up. Council members should realize that in the description of fishing modes here, where it says NE or MA, New England or Mid-Atlantic, that's not based on where the activity takes place. That's based on the port of departure.
Right.
And the ports of departure that are labeled New England stretch down to Bristol, Rhode Island. So if a small mesh boat left from Rhode Island and went squid fishing, for example, that gets categorized as a small mesh NE trip.
Right. Right. And
that may in part explain why it appears to be a disconnect.
Right, right. And there's another layer of this onion as well, in that when you do stock assessments, you are using the full set of information, you know, the statistical area where the activity took place and the species and stocks and all that kind of stuff. When you're trying to plan a sampling program, you, again, it's an observable property. You know where the boat left from. You don't necessarily know where it's going. You can get some, based on fishing patterns, you have a higher expectation of activity in a particular area, but you don't necessarily have a sampling frame that allows you to allocate to get coverage on George's Bank per se, as opposed to, you know, Southern New England and so forth. So, thank you.
Dave.
Thanks. I had a couple of questions. One that sort of a spinoff of what Dave Gaethel was asking. How relates to how the importance filter plays in here. Is that already reflected in the allocation that you see in these tables? Or
Yes, exactly. And that's a good question, because it's a way of addressing coverage in two ways. One is to look at the importance of a particular cell, a cell being a mixture of species and fishing mode, with respect to the total discard that occurs for that species. So we applied a filter which constitutes 95% of, we look at those fisheries which constitute 95% of the total discards. So you're not, the ones where you have little fisheries that may be 1% or 0.5%, they may be included in the total because it's working on a sum, but it may exclude some of the very small fisheries, and they would not be considered as part of the cell considered for total discards. The other part of it is that the fisheries are focused on those fisheries which constitute 98% of the total mortality on the fishing mortality on that resource. And the reason for that is that you may want to make sure that you have coverage on fisheries that, say, for example, may have a low a discard rate. Maybe it's a very clean fishery, a homogeneous fishery, but since it constitutes such a large fraction of the total mortality of that resource, it may subsequently become important. Say, for example, a strong year class that comes through that's not growing so as quickly as you might. This is tomorrow's talk. You have a small fishery that is not growing as fast, that you'd want to make sure that you have coverage for that type of fleet. So it works simultaneously on those two basic principles: total discard of that resource and total mortality, total fishing mortality on it. So it does cover it.
Okay, and the second question is in particular, the sea herring fishery is sampled in a proportional basis, and the entire analysis that you go through is only for federally managed species, right? So I'm wondering how, is that?
Yeah, right? That's correct, right, okay. Right. So
I'm wondering how SBRM, all the incredible amount of work your group went through to produce this, how it could be used to help inform the, in Amendment 3, I think we're on, with sea herring, a more strategic sampling design and proportional allocation with respect to American shad and blueback herring, non-federally managed species.
Right, right. And similar questions have been raised for striped bass as another example. I think the basic principles are there, that the first requisite is to obtain the information associated with discarding on a trip basis. That seems to be not only what we've used, but around the world, that seems to be the appropriate sampling unit as opposed to individual tows. And then try to get a rough idea of what is an appropriate number of sea days to achieve a target. So it's just basically a little bit of arithmetic to find out what things seem to work the best. The other part that gets buried in all of this is the sort of the general notion of pilot coverage, and pilot coverage is a recommendation where we may have very little information or no information In that case, we're following again some national guidelines on coverage that is designed to get about 2% of the fleet's activity, which is sort of that basic principle of getting some feedback. I guess someone's trying to turn me off. So anyhow, that's things. I'm giving too long answers to this.
Okay, Paul Howard, then Dr. Yeah. Pierce, then Sally McGee.
Paul, in our list of questions, number four,
yes.
It appears there's one overall CV for Georges Bank, Codd, and Haddock, but the majority of that requirement is being allocated to U.S. Canada and to the Western for Haddock and Codd, there's a CV of zero. Is that something the council should comment on to maybe allocate more of the U.S. Canada, Georges Bank, Haddock CV to outside of U.S. Canada?
I guess it would relate to the general notion of do you need that? I mean, there are other reasons for that level of coverage, the program is oriented towards. But I would agree with the general sentiment that if the primary objective is to monitor the and to reduce the coefficient of variation of the improve the relative precision of the observations, then that should take precedence over quota monitoring and so forth. But again, that's not at my level. That's a policy decision that the council needs to make in terms of which function of observer coverage is more important. This principle will come home to roost with ACLs as well, that monitoring for that purpose and timeliness and risk of overages and everything is a different function than the SBRM is designed to do. Did I answer the question, or did I walk around it?
No, the council needs to address that at some point about prioritizing, for monitoring U.S.-Canada effort with a bycatch or looking at the whole fishery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Dr. Pierce.
Well, Paul just touched on my question, but I'll go in a slightly different direction. The 3,000 sea days that have been set aside for 2008, recognizing it's a transition year, that has been set aside primarily, it appears, and this is described on page 3 of the document, to ensure that program-specific and negotiated TACs are not exceeded. So 3,000 days at sea devoted to that area to ensure that these TACs, to ensure that the TACs are not exceeded. Have you or anyone else involved in the generation of these numbers of trips given thought to what the demand will be on the observer program once we do go to the ACLs and hard TACs? I mean, is 3,000 yeah. days at sea reflective of the kind of effort one needs to ensure that TACs are not exceeded? Because if that's the case, it has tremendous implications for what we're going to do with the next amendment to groundfish. And a related question,
right,
if you can find the question in the first come. Is the 3,000 days at sea an amount that was agreed to with Canada? Was that a negotiated amount for no? Okay.
I can't answer the second question. It has been in place for a number of years as with the initial funding, I think is 2004. Is that right? For the large increase in the U.S. Canada monitoring or the post lawsuit one coverage, with respect to the implications for much broader ACL monitoring, of course that is a basically a terrifying prospect in terms of. The number of days associated with that, and especially in the context of doing it live, real time. You know, the information flow and demand for ACLs is much greater than we presently have the infrastructure to handle right now. So, I mean, when it's applied across the board.
Nancy?
Well, actually, Paul did probably a better job than I would have done in terms of answering that question, because, I mean, the kinds of demands that we're talking about relative to all kinds of fisheries, obviously we have a limited number of days at sea, and there's tremendous competition not only for fisheries within the jurisdiction of this council, but in the other council as well. So, I mean, Paul did a really good job answering that question. Yeah. Thinking about the requirements and the resources necessary relative to the requirements that could be coming down the road, I mean, I think that's part of this exercise as well, is to basically describe the resources that we have available, obviously collectively make some decisions about what the priorities are within this council in the Mid-Atlantic, and then try to figure out how we're going to allocate the days that we have, or perhaps try to figure out how to increase those numbers of days. So, yeah, we think about it all the time.
Sally McGee.
Fishing modes that end up with 0 days, I assume that's because of the filter method, is that right?
Yes. Well, in the instance of the actual coverage, are you referring to? Because, I mean, none of the actual days in columns 2 or 3, you know, which are filtered, they all have some days in them. So with respect to those fleets which we do not cover, for example, the New England handline fishery or the New England lobster pot fishery, and in-state fisheries, the Scottish seine fishery or fleet is not monitored. Those are a consequence of the explicit decisions that are made in terms of one, there's nothing taken off the top, so to speak, to cover those. Say, for example, via the herring fleet as one example, and then two, they don't enter into the process associated with the optimization approach or the discovery days. Sometimes they may, for example, if somebody had a particular interest in the New England Scottish seine fishery, they might want to pursue that. But that 12 days in there, if you look over to the right, is based on, you know, we not only don't have any information in 2004, I don't know if we have much information ever on that. So 12 days is 2% of the total activity for that fleet. So that's basically, or 600 days, I guess, 50 times 12. So I could check that number here in this document. Yeah. So yeah, the short answer is that it wasn't a priority as far as within the whole suite of observed values. One additional limitation that enters into that part is that you want to be able to, if you go sample a particular fishing mode or fleet, you want to have information that is subsequently valuable for computing a coefficient of variation, getting some statistical properties of that estimate there, and it I guess it fell off the radar.
A couple more questions, if
sure.
I could.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be helpful to just go back to at least an aspect of the question that Dave Simpson was asking, and that was how this approach does or doesn't deal with non-federally managed species.
Right.
So if you could just talk about that again. I think it's something that, you know, we all are considering, especially in the context of the herring amendment that's on the table right now. And I think people just need to, myself included, need to really fully understand what information is going to be captured here and what is not with regard to non-federally managed species.
Okay. The SBRM was its mission or its purpose or mandate was to look at 14 federally mandated or federally managed species, but it did not explicitly include anything with respect to state waters, fisheries, or ASMFC species and so forth. There are some where there is the overlap, obviously fluke and dogfish and so forth, but ones that are totally restricted to state water fisheries or ASMFC species, there is no program within that for that purpose.
And one more question on the scallop fishery. Could you explain how you considered the industry-funded component of observer coverage in that fishery in figuring out how to allocate government-funded observer days in that fishery and across all the different modes?
The industry-funded scallop fleet or coverage is not explicitly covered within the SBRM. I believe it's this past year. It's on the order of about 1,800 days were monitored by industry for closed area or special access trips. That's based on the data you see there in terms of the number of sea days required. That is more than adequate to achieve the 30% coverage rate for finfish. It's probably about the right number for turtles. It is a percent coverage industry. It falls in that category of like percent coverage. A fleet or fishing mode, in that it covers it to achieve a kind of a systematic sampling of that fishery over time. The days that are allocated to open area access has been generally one of trying to get as much coverage as we it's sort of the level that Susan Wigley and I work to try to say, okay, we should have some, it would be desirable to have open access trips or open area trips covered with a certain rate. And historically that's been on the order of about 15 to 20 trips a year to do that kind of process. It's I guess that's basically. So it is a major policy kind of issue. I realize that this is probably one that's best addressed by the council in terms of the mandates for coverage. So rather than my trying to address it, did I answer the?
I still don't quite understand how you considered the fact that there are industry funded observer days into figuring out how this fleet should be covered. And I don't want to take too much time here. Maybe we can talk afterwards, but it's something that I think is important to understand because we are falling so short as far as the desired level of observer coverage in all fisheries. So if we're getting closer to our mark because there's an industry-funded component in one fishery, then we should be thinking about that potentially in applying to other fisheries if there's a way to get us to where we want to go. And I'm just not quite understanding how you considered the fact that there were these 1,800 days that...
Right. I get the simple answer is that
There were no allocations made for that. If you look at, say, lines 27 through 31, 27 through 30 in that table, you can see that there was no prioritized 2008 coverage for that fleet, even though there's well over around 1,000 days that would have been allocated had we had incorporated that as part of the SBRM allocation process. So the fact that it's covered essentially is we're using that mandated coverage through industry-funded coverage to say that that is sufficient to meet the mandate there. So we didn't compute any percent differences from that.
So as a result, are you able to then, or did you take days away from the scallop fleet and allocate them elsewhere because there's this industry-funded component in the scallop fishery?
No, actually, if you look at, say, line 31 and 32, those are New England and Mid-Atlantic scallop dredge fisheries, open access areas, general category, that's OG. We allocated to those areas because those 9 days and 18 days are set as coverage rates for those two fisheries because they are not covered under the mandated coverage there. Those were covered as part of the explicitly to address that shortfall. So similarly, protected species is looking at is recommended 131 days. That's line 36. To cover turtles in the Mid-Atlantic scallop trawl fishery open areas general category.
But there isn't a corresponding line for every industry-funded fishing mode in the scallop fishery. There isn't a corresponding line for that is government-funded observer coverage.
That's correct, right. There is no additional coverage if it is industry funded. So,
Jim Alderman.
I think I'll wait until we get to the letter. Mine are mostly comments, not questions at all.
Right, Paul Howard.
I think this is our first time through this, so we're kind of struggling a little bit. Most of it's just questions because mm-hmm. it's the first time going through this report. But correct me if I'm wrong, Nancy or Paul, that what we're looking at is an annual process where the preferred level of coverage will probably not match what's available. So the Science Center will develop a set of priorities to you because of the mismatch. And then you're going to ask the council to comment on the priorities and make recommendations. And we were not prepared to do that today, I don't think. But in the future, I'm hoping as we discuss with our ecosystem committee that we're going to start up, made up of council chairs, committee chairs, and we might be able to concentrate on the priorities as opposed to the questions in the future, because it's clearly council policy where they want to make recommendations on where the observer coverage should be. So in the future, I think we'll be, more focused on the priorities. But today, it's just questions about how you came up with your information. Is that correct?
Yes. Right. Nancy?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. We gave the document out at the last meeting with the hopes that people would look at it, and it's obviously that people did. And these questions are very helpful. But again, we're viewing this year essentially as over. It's a transition year. And what we're looking forward to is getting your input relative to your priorities. And as Paul said, you know, within the context of the resources that we currently have, the competition obviously between fisheries and fisheries needs and the councils as well, and establish what we plan to do is put the priorities on the table working through this process, the SBRM, and then getting your input. So that's exactly what the purpose is.
And it just to add, the more broadly based that consultation process is, I think the more reflective it will be of sort of the not only council mandate, but also where sort of emerging issues, if you will, are likely to be a significant issue. Certainly, strong year classes, one of the first early warning systems you have are reports of fishermen to this process. So that's certainly a major consideration. Monitoring of the efficacy of management measures, raised foot ropes or separator trawls or so forth are possible if, you know, additional coverage is, you know, would benefit that process and aid or facilitate management measures. So, but thinking of it as an integrated package, it is helpful because it, you know, it means that you need to everybody, the vessel trip reports need to be modified. The number of vessels that might be using those types of gears needs to be established if you want representative coverage. If you want to do this with low levels of coverage, then the only way you can do that is to have a representative sample. The only way you can have a representative sample is if you have a statistical list to work from. So, thank you.
Lori, you'll pass. You're all set. Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the recreational fishery subsumed under the two handline categories, or is it not dealt with at all in this? And if it's not, why not? I mean, even if it's under handline, there's zero allocated days to it. So where would the recreational component come in?
This is oriented towards commercial fisheries. The recreational handline is handled with the intercept program through MRFIS, or an enhanced program that perhaps states may monitor. I know that, for example, the state of Massachusetts does have headboat monitoring as a particular activity. So that, I guess that's where it's handled, and hopefully the new and improved MRIP will be dealing with it more concretely or explicitly through the intercept program. So.
You all set, Jim? Okay. Dr. Rago, I noticed there's been some back and forth between staff and the council staff, and then there was a response memo that the council has. And I noticed in certain instances the optimization process has not been utilized for certain modes, and there's reference that it will be in the future. There's also statements such as a transition period will be needed to realign observer staff if significant changes in the C-day schedule occur. At what level, and maybe it's the NRCC level, but at what level can we get clarity on a couple of things? One would be when we should have our ducks in a row and recommendations for allocation of sea days available. And number two, with specifically with the transition period referenced, what are we talking about? We make a recommendation and then the following year, there'll be a year in between the recommendation and the transition? Or is it a 2 to 3 month lead time?
We are in the process of trying to scope out what it will take to apply the optimization approach, as well as to routinely update the information associated with SBRM, and that is as noted in that correspondence. The SBRM is a way of reducing the dimensionality or the scope of the problem, so that we work with a set of realistic observations. The short answer is the sooner the better, in terms of the lead time on this. You don't always know what kinds of problems we're going to anticipate as we try to increase the scope of the programmatic effort necessary to do the optimization approach. I mean, there's always it's data, and there are always problems of handling these large data sets. It also requires fairly large, efforts of my colleagues at the Fishery Center to assemble this stuff. So the sooner the better. The timing of that, I think, might be something actually at the NRCC could address.
I note in your presentation you did a good job of laying out visually what the timeline's like, when the money's actually received, so on and so forth. So I'm just wondering if we should actually be writing or recommending our preferences for allocation of available sea days, with the expectation that there'll be a one-year delay before those days are actually realized on the water. I mean, do we have to move to something like that? Dr. Thompson.
Yeah, I think those are really good questions, John, and I also think that these are the things that we need to talk and flesh out at the NRCC. There's no question that it's a very time-consuming process. It's very labor-intensive. It's very time-consuming. A whole series of filters that are applied. It's going to take us considerable amount of prep work in terms of the data that we have, and then apply that to the process. So I guess the short answer is that that's exactly what we need to discuss, and my view is that it needs to be at the NRCC.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, John. I do need to follow up on my previous question, because in your response, are you, when I said recreational fisheries, are you responding based on both the party charter boat fishery and the, we'll call it, recreational fishery, the non-party charter boat recreational portion? Are you responding to that both of those are covered under the other programs that you were talking about?
Okay. Yes, both are covered under other programs, not necessarily the same.
Right. I heard you say the head boats, but then I didn't know whether you were including both the head boats and non-head boats. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Sure. I would be glad to assist anybody who wants to take me out to the tuna fishing or something like that. I'll be sea sampling with have a observer for every trip.
We'd love to take you dog fishing, but
I'm not sure if that's open there. It's not.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. First of all, Paul, I want to say the discussion here has been very enlightening. I mean, I thought when I looked at these numbers initially that some of them seem wildly off one way or the other, and with the explanations that have been provided, I'm becoming more comfortable with them. I'd like to kind of have you walk me through another one. And that is, I have a real hard time with these numbers. I think it's 23, the large mesh trawl, where in this case the omnibus amendment provides a number that's smaller than the prioritized number. It's roughly half. And the number in the omnibus number in this case seems small. to me, given the relative number of trips, but when you consider how many trips have been observed in the past in that fishery, I'm not sure you need a whole bunch of new ones every year unless you pick up a radical change in either the discard rates or the catch rates or whatever. You'd have to note some otherwise it's probably pretty much the same. But it jumps to 14, it doubles. And is that part of the court order for Amendment 13? That comes out to roughly 5% of the 30,000 days that are fished, last I knew. Or is it just happened to come out that way?
Yeah, I think it, in part, it could be the 730 days coverage is based on 2004 data. The 1,494 days for row 23 are based on 2006 and 2007 data. So that could be the explanation. That prioritized coverage there is exclusively related to coverage for groundfish, monkfish, and fluke scup and sea bass. So the particular detail, I don't know whether that mismatch would be as great as hopefully if everything was completely aligned, if the tables were completely synchronized, there shouldn't be that much difference between them. In fact, that may be the underlying cause for that. So, yeah.
Tom Neese.
Paul, I've got a question, and it sort of fell out of the conversation about transition. In the exchange between the staffs, there's a line. We question where the requirement for the 3,000 days in the U.S.-Canada area came from in the special access and B programs. And the response from the center includes this line. With the implementation of the SBRM, the regional office has relinquished the 30% coverage rate. And so I guess my question is, does that mean that we took 48% of our days and took them out of the SBRM and the optimization tool for a requirement that no longer exists? And if so, I mean, how do we get those days back and use them on other things that may be more important?
I don't think I can answer the relinquishment clause there, but that was our understanding that the SBRM now takes precedence over that. Now, that being said, it doesn't take precedence over countermanding the intent of congressional language that supports New England groundfish as a priority for funding, and so there are several sort of policy level kind of interactions that are going on. As I said, one is the mandate to cover at a very high level or relatively high level percent coverage rate, as well as the demands of quota monitoring, which will typically have higher rates. And then I guess the other one is the B day coverage. As part of a trust but verify policy. So,
well, let me ask a follow-up then. The eastern U.S. Canada area in recent years has been closed for a good part of the year, which means a lot of these days are being spent in Georgia's yellowtail. The Category B Day at Sea program, there really haven't been hardly any SAPs except for the closed Area 1 hook gear haddock SAP, which has a relatively small number of trips. The Category B Day at Sea program, number of days used in the last year or two, I think is on the order of 500, 600, maybe 1,000 at the most. What happens to these days that are set aside if those programs don't eat up all 3,000 days? Does the money roll over into the next year? Does it get reprogrammed during the course of the year? Or what happens to it if you set aside 3,000 days and you don't use them all?
I can't answer that, but perhaps Nancy or Amy Van Atten, who is here, might have. Okay.
Hi, Amy Van Atten. Those 3,000 days is just an estimate of what would be needed to attain approximately 30% coverage in the U.S.-Canada management area and the regular B-day programs and the SAPs. That doesn't mean that all those days would end up being used. So that just gives us a projection at the beginning of the year, and then we go on a monthly we look at it quarterly and monthly and adjust accordingly. If days aren't used, then it goes back into the groundfish pool of days. So we only have so many discrete pots of funds. We can't use groundfish funds in the Mid-Atlantic. We can't use Mid-Atlantic funds in New England groundfish. So currently, the coverage, those 3,000 days, are coming out of groundfish funds. So they'd go back into covering groundfish fisheries.
Mike Leary, then Jim Odlin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amy, I thought you could only use 3,500 B days a year. And if your 3,000 is set aside for 30%, the numbers just don't seem correct.
Most of those are going to the U.S.-Canada management area. Area 4, the western area primarily, takes up a lot of those days.
B days? Are you talking about these eastern
areas?
No,
they're
okay.
A days.
A days.
Yep.
Okay.
Jim?
Yeah, I think, I'm following up on the number four and number five in the number four in the staff document, and I think that number of days for quota monitoring is excessive. And I just also want to point out that the Canadians currently are using 20% coverage for an ITQ system that we're sharing those quotas with. I mean, they started June 1st with 20% coverage on Georges Bank. And we're looking at, anywhere from 30 to 48. It depends on how you look at it. For quota monitoring, 40% of our days are going to quota monitoring. I think 30% coverage is the target. So I think that's excessive, and we need to figure out a way to reallocate as a policy from the council. I don't know the mechanism to do that. I think that's what Tom was going.
Well, I agree, Jim. I'm struggling to figure out how many days are available to possibly be redistributed, and we've got some pots of money have restrictions associated with them. Others have mandates associated with them. But so on and so on. It's difficult to figure out, even if we do make recommendations, whether or not they can be accepted and who has the ability to make those decisions. Are we cooperating, or are we just going to make some recommendations? And, I don't think we want to go through a process of making recommendations that can't happen. So I think what we need to do, and as Paul said, this is the beginning of this process, we need to figure out what the constraints are and what the process is going to be. And plot that on a timeline so that we're scheduling our side of the work, so that we're meeting a period or a deadline that we can then hand something over to you that can be used, and that we're commenting on things that you're going to take into account. So there's a lot of hanging issues out there. The staff brought up some, and I think as we go through this process year in and year out, we're going to hopefully iron out some of those wrinkles. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, from what you've just said, Mr. Chairman, I would assume that you and the executive committee would be putting together some timeline regarding when we would have to provide some specific recommendations as to how we would like to see some of these days redistributed. I'm having the same problems that you're having regarding trying to figure out what can be shifted around, if anything. So I would anticipate that you and the executive committee would assist the council with a timeline. I'll only offer up one suggestion, and that is the number 41 discovery, and it's already been alluded to, maybe it was by Paul. where it says discovery days are held in reserve to address emerging questions of scientific and management interest as the year progresses to minimize disruption to statistically designed ongoing coverage. It's only 60 sea days. In light of our discussions that we'll have tomorrow on groundfish and some of the options that we'll be considering, such as gear-restricted areas, I would like to see a greater pool of days set aside that can be used for us to, you know, do the sort of sea sampling that we would like to see done in order to justify access to specific areas with gear that we will decide tomorrow are appropriate for use in certain areas. That 60 days isn't going to cut it, and I'm afraid that if it stays at 60 days, potentially we'll be in a position where NOAA fisheries won't be able to aggressively deal with our specific initiatives because there just won't be enough days there to do the work. That's my strongest recommendation, and that's to take some of the days, maybe out of the 3,000, and if they're going to be redistributed to groundfish, then I would like to see them put into the discovery category that relates to groundfish.
Okay, thanks, David. I got you, right, Jim? Okay. Anyone else? Anyone in the audience? Gib?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I've just got a couple of questions, and you've answered most of them as you've gone along, Dr. Rago. Am I right? I've been trying to follow along. Column number 3, the prioritized 2008 coverage, that's being derived more or less with the status quo process. Is that right? It's not using the importance filters?
The prioritized 2008 coverage incorporates the optimization approach as described. It also incorporates the coverage which is extracted off the top, if you will, to cover herring. That's also for the scallop observer days.
So with this being a transition year, this is more or less the status quo process that was used in the past? Is that a fair statement?
Prior to the passage of the SBRM,
okay.
That was the...
Great. Yeah. On specific questions on the table here, on midwater trawl coverage, it seems there's something that just doesn't make sense, that the coverage for New England midwater trawls is 35% of what is prescribed. I'm looking at line 19.
Line 19.
19
right.
And
yep.
20.
Okay.
That New England midwater trawl is 35% of what's prescribed by the SBRM, but then just below that, the mid-Atlantic midwater trawl is 294% of what's prescribed. Is there some rationale? Is that part of the Bristol, Rhode Island line between New England and the mid-Atlantic?
I'm assuming that's the difference there. I can't answer that in particular detail on that part right now.
Okay. Hold on. On page number 2, you reference of your presentation, reference two different kinds of reports, an annual and a every 3 year report,
mm-hmm.
And it's. The annual report says that there will be 5 specific report summaries. Can you and then the evaluation report will have 8 specific report summaries. Can you tell us what's going to be in those?
I think I would draw your attention to the Federal Register notice, which has a particular suite of recommendations that summarize. Partitions by fleet, by stat area, and so forth. That's on page 4738 of the Federal Register notice, first column.
Thank you. I was trying to reconcile them, and I just couldn't come up with
heads
or tails on
right.
that one.
Great.
I think that's it. To answer Sally's question about scallops, I looked up Framework 19 that does the observer set-aside, and that's the number that's in Framework 19 that was just passed estimates that there's going to be $3.3 million coming from the scallop observer set-aside that will more than fund what's required under the SBRM. So hopefully that will take care of that. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Kim.
Yeah. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Kalin from Winterport, Maine. I just had a definition question just for a second. We've been trying to keep up with the documents over time. Column 3 is given just to ask, it's optimization plus herring and scallops and other priorities that have been established either by the council or the agency or by the public interest, I assume. How does the prioritization in that way for herring and scallops differ than the optimization process that John was trying to get to? It isn't that all optimization? I guess it's just I'm just asking what the difference between optimization and highlighting those specific priorities is, Dr. Rago, that's all. Just,
sure.
You know, semantics-wise.
Yeah, it's, the difference is that we have in place since 2003 the a program to optimize coverage for groundfish, monkfish, and the fluke scup sea bass coverage, subject to some constraints. The priorities that were set for 2008 coverage reflect a mix of sort of off the top proportional allocation to those components, including, you know, those fisheries that might take herring or pelagics, and then it's summed or aggregated with the others.
So the optimization definition is specific to the programmatic requirements that you have. So the other is prioritization, I guess. And I think you, Mr. Chairman, were trying to get at how the council delivers the public and the council's prioritization priorities on an annual basis to this process. Is that right? Because, okay, so now I'm understanding the difference in the definition. Thank you.
Anything else? Anything further from the council? Paul, do you have anything else?
I just had one comment. First, I just want to, it's been a pleasure to speak with the council, but I also wanted to It's also a pleasure for me to represent the center, and I'd be completely remiss in not mentioning Susan Wigley, my colleague, who has done an extraordinary amount of work in terms of this background document and presentation. And for those areas where I did stumble and wasn't able to answer the questions, Susan certainly would have been able to fill in had she been here. So thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Hey, anything else under SBRM? Sally?
So what are we doing with the memo? Maybe I missed that. Are we going, is this going to constitute the council's comments on this, or?
We just gave some too.
Yeah, I know we just gave some, but I'm just wondering how this is going to be actually incorporated into where the observer days go. Since this is the first time we're doing this, I think we need to kind of understand how the these kind of general and not all pulled together comments are going to be submitted.
Yeah, I think we had a bit of a conversation about that. I think that I myself and Paul Howard need to go back and figure out and present back to the council the best process for us so that our comments are meaningful and useful. Not to say that these aren't to the staff, but so we have a process set up so that we can get out and ahead of this thing and make sure that the days are allocated appropriately and that the Observer Corps has an opportunity to make whatever adjustments may be necessary to phase in the changes that we recommend. So I'm not sure that the comments or the back and forth in the documents that we have, SEP number 7 and number 8, will be implemented this year, if that's your question. My take on it is we're too late for this year. So I'm, in a sense, using this as a learning experience and saying let's get ahead of it for next year. Dave.
Yeah, I guess this is so complicated. you have your whole, you know, back to column one. This is what we ought to be doing if we want to achieve the 95% of discards and 98% of mortality type coverage. But then you have this reduction based on what's affordable, and I'm wondering if each species committee or PDT has had the opportunity to look at, I mean, this is proportional blind to each species, and has, for scup, for example, the folks who have to assess scup, do they look at this and say, well, that's, now we've lost what we really need to begin to do an analytical assessment on this stock. Has that feedback occurred? Because the same, you know, a 30% cut to one species is probably acceptable to another. It may render it unusable, you know.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because, you know, the committees and sort of the information required for stock assessments are oftentimes more intensive than you have when you're trying to achieve a broad brush level precision across a suite or a mixture of species. So in terms of elevating a particular species group to a higher plane or higher level of precedence, that's the kind of feedback that could definitely improve the estimation as well as the allocation.
Yeah, I guess that's you know, this whole idea of you know, an importance filter. It sort of comes back to, you know, your most sensitive species in terms of the estimate of discards for the management of that species. And I don't know where we are in terms of, say, thorny scape. It's something that's at a, I should never use examples. Take something at a very low stock level where there's a high level of concern about their rebuilding and so forth. It seems to me one of the, you know, in terms of a process, those would be the species you would start with and say, are we getting the adequate coverage? Where would you invest, you know, reallocate to make sure we got the data we needed? Where, you know, the difference between, you know, 30 and 50% CVs for many other stocks may not matter. So I wonder about where that process, because I just don't have enough in front of me to make those kind, to provide those kinds of inputs, but it seems to me that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a big, thick document that has, you know, about 150 tables in it that try to go through that process. But like I said, beginning this process now is what is important, and, you know, the more sort of ongoing feedback we can get over the course of the year, the better, you know, particularly in advance of the things. And there are other logistical issues that we didn't describe, but, you know, just, you know, this is a person-oriented process, and people that have to live in ports and nearby ports and move around and so forth. So moving individuals from New Bedford to Norfolk is a big deal. So that's a consideration too, if this council wants to do that, perhaps.
Okay. Anything further? Thanks, Paul. Anything further today? Okay. Jim Salisbury.
Could you tomorrow do something with the high-pitched tone? I'm starting to feel like a poorly trained dog, and I probably am, but it's not going to change things now. It's just, it's been so distracting. It's very hard to. And I know they've been trying, but maybe we've got to try something different.
Okay. It's really tough. I'm not sure I can actually fix it, but I'll make sure we try to fix it.
If you could make it happen, that would be good. Thank you.
Mike.
With Jim's Salisbury's comfort in mind, yesterday at the Groundfish Committee meeting, it was very cold in here, and today it's very hot. If we could have the average tomorrow.
Would anyone care for iced tea or lemonade at the table?
If you could, yeah.
Sure. Okay. So we'll work on the air conditioning and the audio. Anything else? Okay. See you tomorrow morning at 8:30.